on 2FM. With Green Farm, B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for taking us through this afternoon. It's Wednesday the 20th of April. I'm Shane Dawson and this is Game On. Coming up this evening, the Premier League title race rolls on. David Slade and David Connolly are with us as it's over to Man City to get 3 points tonight after Liverpool got the job done last night. In Gaelic games, Damien Lawler has the latest on the Armagh trio. Free to play Donegal. Plus, Galway and Athenry legend Joe Rabbit will be paying tribute to the late Kate Moran. Plus, we've John Kenny on day two at the Irish Open Swimming Championships. All the rest of the day's news and another chance to win our Super Punchestown Festival giveaway. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It's great to have your company in this Wednesday evening. You're listening to Game on 2FM and I am in the company of David Snade. And David, before we chat, a couple of news headlines to get through that caught my eye today. Starting with, I suppose, the big story across sport and outside of sport as well, as you may have heard there in the 6pm news headlines. MTK Global, a boxing promotion and management company co-founded by Daniel Kinahan, has announced it will cease operations at the end of the month. In a statement issued on their website, they claimed leading boxing promoters have informed us that they will be severing all ties with MTK and no longer will work with our fighters. Daniel Kinahan, who has been named in the High Court as the controller and manager of the Kinahan Crime Organisation, has been placed on an Office of Foreign Assets Control list, which is a list of the US Treasury Department. MTK stated that Kinahan has had no involvement in the company since 2017 when the co-founder parted ways with the company. Today's statement by MTK Global claims that as a business, we have faced unprecedented levels of unfair scrutiny and criticism since the sanctioning by the US government of Daniel Joseph Kinahan. They added that unfounded allegations about his ongoing association with us and our fighters persist. In tennis, Russian and Belarusian players will not be allowed to compete at Wimbledon this year because of the invasion of Ukraine. Men's world number two, Daniel Medvedev and Russia, and women's world number four, Arina Sabalenka of Belarus are the highest ranked players to be affected. The All England Lawn Tennis Club said it had a responsibility to limit Russia's global influence through the strongest means possible. Wimbledon runs, of course, from June 27 to the 10th of July. Rugby news today. Former Ireland international Sean Cronin has confirmed he will retire at the end of the season. Cronin, who turns 36 next month, will bring the curtain down on a trophy-laden career, which has seen him play for Munster, Connacht and indeed Leinster, as well as winning 72 international caps. Meanwhile, Munster have confirmed the signing of French centre Anton Friche, who joins from Bristol Bears next season. The 6'2" centre has signed a 3-year contract at Thomond Park and is Irish qualified through his maternal grandmother. And finally, in association football, it has been reported that Waterford Football Club have parted company with manager Ian Morris, with the pre-season First Division title favourites currently in 5th place after 10 games. Monday's 2-1 defeat at Cork City was the fourth loss in the last 6 matches, giving them 9 points adrift of the Rebels. Only the champions are guaranteed promotion, with the next 4 finishers involved in a playoff series alongside the second last team in the Premier Division. David Snade, as I did mention, is with us. David, I will be getting your thoughts and views on Ian Morris's departure, and indeed, unfortunately, Manchester United versus Liverpool, because Paul Curry put me to the sword. We had to talk about Shell's drubbing yesterday, so I'm going to have to come at you with Manchester United's drubbing in a few moments time. But it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic games, and we can welcome Damien Lawler on. And unfortunately, Damien, I'm welcoming you onto the show in sad circumstances. You know, it has to be said, obviously we touched on yesterday Theresa Mannion, the story of the tragic passing of Galway Camogie player Kate Moran, who died following an incident during a senior league game in the county on Monday. Tributes have been pouring in, and Damien, before I come to yourself, I suppose it is very important to get the thoughts of Joe Rabbit, who was speaking to Marty Morrissey. Joe Rabbit, of course, Galway and Athenry hurling legend, who gave his thoughts on the Kate Moran he knew and the Kate Moran he coached.
Well, I suppose, look, at not many people, that, you know, every time you see them, She'd have a beautiful smile, and every time you see her, you'd want to give her a hug. She was the most loving kid, I suppose, that you could see. And she was a great friend to all the girls as well that played Camogie. I'd have two daughters myself playing with her, which, you know, I haven't heard anything nasty about Kate. She was just a wonderful, wonderful kid.
And indeed, very talented, great Camogie player. But her Carl Regard, of course, won All-Ireland Club medals with you.
Yeah. Look at, we'd be outside of the Camogie, we'd be very close to the Morden family, because my dad hurled with George, and I hurled with Cahill, and here we had Kate hurling with my daughter. So, like, it was a kind of, I suppose, a tradition that was handed down along, and we were really looking forward to the future with Kate, because look at, she won her two All-Ireland under 16 medals there a couple of years ago. She played minor, and she was just starting to develop into a fine, fine Camogie player. And you know, as I say, look at, there's a part of Athenry Camogie has died last Monday evening. We're devastated. It's going to be a very, very hard road for us all to travel for the next couple of months.
And I know that the local people have organised a candlelight vigil tonight in Kinney Park in the main GA fields from 9 to 11. And you're obviously, from what I've seen already, there'll be an outpouring of love.
Yeah, look at, this is something, I suppose, that look at, I'm 40 years in the game looking at it, and I never saw anything like this. So, like, it's just a complete freak, an accident. So when things like that happen, I suppose, people feel so sorry. And you know, what can we say? You know, when you just think of the Morden family, and also I'd like to think of the Brennan family. Kate was going out with TJ Brennan, who's another one of the Galway stars of the future. And like, you know, it's just something heartbreak for them all, you know.
Yeah, the words of Joe Rabbit there, as I said, Galway and Athenry hurling legend, speaking to Marty Morrissey a little bit earlier on. Damien Lawler of RT Sport now joins me. Damien, tributes have been just pouring in from Galway and indeed across the country in this heartbreaking story.
Shane, it's hard to add to what Joe said. She was a young lady, a fine player, and just look at what she had achieved in her young life to date in the sporting sense. An accident like that, really, really hard to get the words to describe it, but I know that the whole GAA community will rally around the Morden family, and they'll rally around the club, and they'll have to, because it's just an awful sad story. There's no other way of saying it, Shane. And the young girl had achieved so much. I can't get my head around that. Like, she was so young, but she had achieved so much, and undoubtedly a bright future awaited her. It's just tragic news, Shane.
Absolutely. I just want to finish the conversation with Athenry Camogie Club have released a statement noting Kate began playing with Athenry Camogie Club at underage level and quickly progressed to senior A level with great distinction. She holds a Fela minor county and intermediate county title. She played in the Club All-Ireland Intermediate Final. She won two All-Irelands at under 16 level with Galway, both titles she was incredibly proud of. She was a tremendous role model for our many underage players and a wonderful leader both on and off the field of play. Her bubbly personality will be remembered for eternity. And as Damien Lawler mentioned there, as we mentioned on Game On yesterday, just to reiterate really, everyone here at Game On and indeed across RT Sport offer our sincere condolences to Kate's family, her friends, teammates, and indeed everyone involved in Galway Camogie. It certainly is such tragic news. Damien, I really appreciate you taking the call. Obviously difficult circumstances with Kate, but you've been busy in reporting on Gaelic Games, I suppose, as well, and the story grabbing the headlines is indeed that Armagh will have a full strength squad available for Sunday's Ulster Senior Football Championship clash with Donegal after three of the county's suspended players were cleared to play by the GAA Central Appeals Committee this yesterday evening. It means that the influential Stephen Campbell, Kieran Mackin and Aidan Nugent, who were all handed one match bans by the Central Hearings Committee recently, will be available for the crunch clash in Ballybuffet. What's happening there, Damien?
Yeah, an awful lot, Shane, to be completely honest with you. And that was the story that emerged last night. And, you know, I think it's very, very close to the match for all this to be happening. But there's been another twist today and another twist in the last few hours. It's now the case, Shane, that two players have been cleared to play in Sunday's Ulster quarter final. But I have it confirmed from the GAA that Kieran Mackin is the one to miss out. Kieran I've been told, withdrew his case at a central hearings level last week and has accepted the one-match ban. The other players went forward and they appealed their cases, so I've been told. And they've been cleared to play. I suppose on a technicality, Shane, but the development there in recent moments is that Kieran Macken, a very influential player, he withdrew his case. He won't be playing on Sunday. It's the other two guys, Stephen Campbell and Aidan Nugent as well. So it's big enough news, Shane. It's all happening very, very close to the match on Sunday. It's I don't know if you're in either camp, would you really want a scenario like that? But it is what it is, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, it's a developing story and it sets up the weekend's match perfectly. Listen, Damien Lawler, I'll let you go and hopefully we'll be chatting before the match of this weekend, because it's going to be absolutely brilliant. Damien Lawler, Thanks so much for taking the call. As I mentioned at the start of the show, David Snaid joins me now, and I did mention, David, in our news headlines that it was reported that Ian Morris has departed Waterford Football Club. Waterford Football Club have released a statement in the last few moments, and it reads, Waterford FC can confirm, as of today, the club parted ways with manager Ian Morris. The club would like to thank Ian for all his hard work and wish him the best for the future. Chairman Mitch Cowling said, I personally would like to thank Ian for all his hard work. He's a great guy and I've no doubt he'll manage at the top level. We may have parted ways today, but Ian will always be welcomed at the RSC to cheer the Blues on. I would like to wish Ian all the best in his career and I will be wishing for his success. Waterford FC assistant manager Gary Hunt and David Breen will take the team to work for it on Friday. Just 10 matches played, bit harsh.
It's the nature of football. Regardless of the level or regardless of the demands that may be there. And if you look at like Waterford in the first division, would be a full-time outfit. Like the expectation and the demands would have been, it's still early in the season, but they shouldn't be in fifth spot. That would have been the demands that would have been placed, and they would have been felt that the money that's still being kept around the club, that they should be top of that table vying to get back straight into the Premier Division. You can't help but feel for Ian Morris. If you're looking for, I suppose, a case study on just how ruthless management is, regardless of, as I mentioned, of the level, then what's happened to Ian Morris over the last couple of years is just the primary case in point in terms of, obviously, yourself, you know yourself, what he did with Shelbourne, getting them promoted. And then he's told, even before the end of last season, he knew he was going out the door to be replaced by Damien Duff. And he's probably thinking, well, what happens next? And he gets a job at Waterford, a club who, like, if you think about it, it's only, I'm trying to think of the start of last season in the Premier Division, and like Kevin Sheedy, hero of Italian 90, Irish football legend, is their manager in the dugout. You have Mike Newell, probably the angriest person I've seen on a touchline in the League of Ireland since I've been covering it over the last decade as his number two. He's gone. Then Mark Bertram arrives, coming over from England. Looks to have revitalised the club a little bit. It looks as if they were going to get out of trouble. They're in a playoff. But then he gets sacked right before the end of the season. He ends up then going to the relegation playoff at Richmond Park, and he's in the crowd with the fans. And like, I know there's that hashtag that does the rounds on social media, well, hashtag greatest league in the world. I think sometimes people on the outside think it's like League of Ireland fans saying that, oh well, this is the greatest league in the world and all the rest, but I don't think they realise that it's probably it's all steeped in irony. And Waterford have kind of epitomised that over the last year, and then now for Ian Morris, it genuinely seems as if, do you know what, it was a really smart appointment to bring him in, because he has that track record already, even as a young manager, of being able to get a club up who would expect to get up. You know, like, you probably have a better understanding of what the job he would have done at Shells in terms of maybe revitalising the club and just getting them believing again a little bit. Like, I'm trying to think back, they had an unbelievable run, like in the first half of last season, Shelbourne, where they just won game after game, like 16, 17 games. But then you listen to what Ian Morris was talking about, where he went through a sticky patch and was told your job was under threat at Shelbourne. So he knows what the score is. He's been around professional football in England and the lower leagues. Like, he knows like what would have been coming after 10 games of a season. And let's be honest as well, like, that's not where Waterford should be in that league. Like, you look at the table, like, Treat United are above them. Like, Treat your United, if you compared budgets with Waterford,
chalk and cheese.
Yeah, like Treaty would be a club who wouldn't pay players. They'd be getting expenses. Do you know what I mean? This is where we're at here. This is the kind of the discrepancy that they're more so in the first division, but you also see in the Premier Division where you see clubs who are like full time, still clubs who would be maybe part time training in the evenings and working around different schedules. Even Shelbourne now at the moment in the Premier Division, where they're working off a first team schedule in terms of the morning trainings, but player driven, like players are still out there trying to get work. I remember even listening recently that Aidan Irvine, who plays midfield, was doing an online degree as well, just to keep himself busy. But like, you look at the top of the table there, like Cork City are kind of 23 points. There's Galway who are just behind them with John Caulfield as well. Like, and this is again, like, Colin Healy did a great job at Cork, but like, you look at the calibre of manager as well who's in that first division trying to get out, and what John Caulfield has done with Cork City previously in the League of Ireland when putting up to Stephen Kenny and was winning doubles and was getting into Europe. And then obviously Longford Town, who were the kind of like, they're kind of like, I don't know, would you say like they're like them and Norwich should be twins? Just like,
it's going to be Norwich or Fulham.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's like, there could be, like, definitely they deserve to have like a pre-season friendly major, I'd say. But Ian Morris, like, it's in the statement there about, they say he's destined to manage the highest level back in, if that's in Ireland or whatever. But you'd wonder for him, like, I don't know what this does to him in terms of like how early you can, your own resolve can be beaten down when like you do a great job at Shells and you're told, listen, we're going a different way here. The stock was worrying very high. It's probably part of the reason why you got that Waterford job at full time club in the first division, expected to get back up, but he's paid the price by not being able to deliver straight away, and that's what you have to do.
Yeah, obviously, and you mentioned there it's cutthroat, I suppose, football in general, and they were pre-season favourites to go up and they're currently fifth, as we did mention, 7 points off Cork City, and it's tough to turn around. I think the one thing from speaking to Shells players, I suppose, whatever about on the pitch, and it was funny actually, I think it was yourself or someone mentioned Sean Dyche, and I think you were mentioning Roy Hodgson and the relationship he has with players. It's actually Keith Tracy on a podcast. I was listening to Keith Tracy and he mentioned the relationship Sean Dyche has with players. And that's what I found striking chatting to Shelburne players, was more their personal relationships and how gut-wrenching it was for them, for Ian to go in those circumstances as well. So listen, when you look at the points on the board, and that's what you're going to be judged on as well, but he seems to be a, you know, really good guy, and the players like him, they get on with him. But yeah, as you mentioned, it's unfortunate, and that's football. That is football. And our football chat will continue. We're going to have David Connolly on the line as well as we turn our attention to the Premier League. But that is just some breaking news there from Waterford Football Club, as I say, confirming that manager Ian Morris has departed. Before we do take a quick 90-second ad break, it is time to mention our competition. And our Punchestown Festival competition, as the Punchestown Festival returns from Tuesday the 26th to Saturday the 30th of April, and 2FM will be there as we enjoy one of Ireland's favourite social and sporting events. And to celebrate, we have two pairs of Flexi reserved enclosure tickets each day this week, so you can enjoy all the extras of the reserved enclosure, which is the social hub of the event with amazing trackside viewing, great live music, bars and style. So to be in with a chance to win, just answer this following question: who was confirmed as the 2021 champion trainer at last year's Punchestown Festival? So that's who was confirmed as the 2021 champion trainer at last year's Punchestown Festival. Text your answer, your name, your county and your email address to 51552. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. Stay with us though, as we will continue our football chat in a few moments time.
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On live here on 2FM. I'm Shane Dawson and I'm in the company now of David Slade and David Connolly, because we have a double dose of David as we turn our attention to association football. One, a David who represented his country at a World Cup, amassing over 40 international caps for Ireland. The other, a veteran of the United Churches League and a staunch advocate of five-a-side Astro. David Connolly and David Slade, gentlemen, it's great to have your company. If I go to the former Irish international first, which you respect, to David Slade.
That's okay.
David Connolly, only one place to start: Liverpool's drubbing of Manchester United. What did you make of it?
Yeah, good evening, guys. I guess, look, did anybody think it would turn out any different? I guess that would probably be the question. Yeah, there wasn't really any surprises. you know, Liverpool in fantastic form and Man United kind of all over the place. So I don't think there's any real shock at that result. You know, Liverpool I thought were fantastic, but they were, you know, United just couldn't get close to them. And, you know, they thoroughly deserved their victory, you know. So, you know, United, all 11 players camped on the edge of their box. You know, that was the story of the game. So if you're a United fan, it's difficult times.
Yeah, certainly is. And let's speak to a United fan and a respected football journalist, I should say, on a serious note as well, David. I may have been a bit harsh in my intro there, but listen.
Harsh but fair. True torts.
Like, it was the hopeless leading the helpless for Ralf Rangnick's side.
Yeah. Like David is spot on. Like, no one was surprised in terms of what happened. Like, you see what happened earlier in the season when, like, they came to Old Trafford and just showed us superiority and were absolutely ruthless. And they didn't have to be the same way. They were able to just switch off after pretty much 25 minutes. Like, because they had the game won, they were able to just relax, click into third gear almost, and just cruise through the. Go through the motions a little bit, and then there seemed to be that period just before they got to tour goal where United, when they brought Jadon Sancho on, actually looked as if they were beginning to have a bit of a threat. But then when you actually think about it, that threat was literally just getting into Liverpool's half. Like, they barely had a shot on goal. Liverpool's superiority was there for all to see, and you just get that sense now. It's like Groundhog Day. Like, it's United have become just great at creating content for different social media channels where the clips come on after it and you see Roy Keane getting his 1.5 minutes, 2 minutes of chat, annihilating different players, and rightfully so, and like eviscerating them for just their attitude and the mentality.
Well, he went from, he's not even angry anymore, he's just disappointed.
You see that, yeah. It's like your parents, isn't it, when you come home and you haven't been, and it's like, you know.
That's a lot worse.
Exactly. And that's it, when you've kind of almost worn down Roy Keane's resolve for fury where you're at. And that's what this players have done. They've done this to a group, to a fan base where, like, you would probably say maybe even a few months ago there'd be a few fans would think, oh well, if we keep this player or keep that player. But if you said to them, now we'll start from scratch, I don't think anyone would be afraid to lose every single player there, because what's happened at the club has just been a shambles. And it's an incredible the manner of the decline when you consider that United finished ahead of Liverpool last season. Obviously, COVID and all the rest of it would have played a major part in that. Obviously, there was no fans and in the grounds, and there was different situations going on. But that was an anomaly, really. That, because you look at how the clubs have both been run over the last number of years. Like, Jurgen Klopp is now the longest serving manager in the Premier League since Sean Dyche was sacked. But it's just two clubs that are run completely differently. One run purely to try and achieve sporting greatness. Essentially, that's what they've tried to do, and they're on the brink of it this season when you look up the.
How have they gone about that though? Because I know that, like, Liverpool are accredited with Jurgen Klopp being such a good manager and they've got such good players, but the background of this, because this is, I suppose, a conversation that, you know, and I have to say, I've zero graph for either club. I'm not a United fan, yeah, or a Liverpool fan or anything, but looking at it from just a football fan, and it's sad to see Manchester United, the iconic Manchester United, fall into the state they are in. And Liverpool had a tough couple of years, and obviously they've been so great historically as well, but in recent years, in terms of how they've manufactured this greatness off the pitch.
Yeah, well, this summer Liverpool are going to lose someone who has been absolutely imperative to the success, and that's Michael Edwards. He's been in the job for just over 10 years. He's been the sporting director. He's been the one who's worked pretty much in tandem with Jurgen Klopp. He was there beforehand, obviously, as well, when Brendan Rodgers was the manager. And like, his, I suppose, vision working within that Sports Fenway group has just been absolutely crucial to the manner of how Liverpool have been run. And, like, it is, listen, when you see what's happened with United and that performance last night, and all the fallout centres around what's happened with Man United, and it's understandable because, as you say, it's like an iconic club that has just fallen so far from grace. Like, what was it Alex Ferguson said about knocking Liverpool off their perch? Mm. Well, like, look where Man United are now. But if you look at what Liverpool have done since, like, Jurgen Klopp has taken over, if you look at not just with their transfers but how they've run the club, is it's a case of getting rid of players when they know the time is right, bringing people in and identifying targets ahead of other clubs, because they've had to be smart, they've had to be clever. They're not one of these clubs who, even though have got serious financial backing, a lot of that is self-sustaining. It's by increasing the attendance in the stadium, it's by that allure of the club and increasing sponsorships and delivering success on the pitch. But they also then, will get those players in who Jurgen Klopp has turned into superstars. So like in the first season of his first full season at the end of that year, like he still finished fourth, he still finished well off the pace. Like Chelsea dominated the league that year, Liverpool, that was the building blocks. But then at the end, in the end of that first year, to get Joe Matip on a free transfer from Schalke, they bring in Sadio Mane from Southampton, and they bring in Georgie Wijnaldum. Now they still made some mistakes. They brought in Clavin, the centre back, and they brought in Karius, who some Liverpool fans will never forgive for that Champions League performance. But that kind of summer almost set up, because they get rid of Jordan Ibe for 15 million. And like David will remember Jordan Ibe going to when he went to Bournemouth. Like this fella was, people were thinking he's going to be the new Raheem Sterling. He would have been like a hot prospect. Fans would have had so much kind of hope for him, but yet the club identified and said, no, he's not actually at the calibre for what we need. They get rid of him for £15 million, and he goes to Bournemouth. They get rid of Joe Allen, who goes to Stoke for £11 million, and incredibly they get rid of Christian Benteke to Crystal Palace for just shy of £30 million. Like, that just is one summer transfer window that kind of just sums up how a club should be run who are trying to progress, and that's what he's had to deal with. And like David will know this about when you see that influx of different players and quality, it just spreads through a club and gives so much confidence.
Absolutely. I suppose, David, if you were to come in on that as well, and we're talking about how good and how well Liverpool operated, and then you compare that with Manchester United, and yes, obviously it's likely that Erik ten Hag will come in as a manager, but we're looking for an overhaul. It was announced that Manchester United chief scout Jim Lawler, who's been there for 16 years, and head of global scouting Marcel Bout, who's been there for 8 years, have left the club ahead of their summer rebuild. I mean, David, you've been involved with many clubs over the years, and you've given your life to professional football. Can it get much worse for Manchester United? Surely there has to be a point where this is ground zero.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of great points there from David. I mean, Marcel Bout was my coach when I was at Feyenoord, and Marcel came into United, I think, with Van Gaal around that sort of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been there for, eight years, which is a surprise, to be honest. I mean, he was never really a scout. He was always a coach, but you know, that's not, I'm not saying anything detrimental against Marcel, but I think it comes a point, and maybe it could have happened a few years ago, where, you know, things are freshened up, you know, behind the scenes. I used to work in recruitment at Bristol City, and, you know, these things are transient. People move around, you know, new manager comes in, new ideas, you know, I left, you know, that kind of happens. It's unusual, I guess, for a club like United, and to have the same recruitment staff for a long period, and also the pathway they went down. Now, they went down a kind of an English pathway, I think, with, say, Maguire, Sancho, Wan-Bissaka, right? Hmm. Thinking, okay, we're going to get a British core. Now, that's an expensive... You have to add on an extra premium whenever you sign these players. You know, whereas you look at a Liverpool, and I wouldn't necessarily say they have a pathway or a plan in place for the recruitment to be British. It seemed like the plan was, you know, we're going to find and sign the players that fit the profile of how the manager wants to play. It doesn't matter where they're from, you know, and then we'll try and pay the right price. So, you know, if we need a centre forward that could also play wide, you know, maybe Diego Jota could fill that role, you know, like he did at Wolves. He can play in any of the front positions, you know. Diaz could come in, you know, we could pick him up for a similar sort of money, can play in a wide position, just in case what's happening with Salah, what's happening with Mane, fits the profile, quick, direct, skillful, you know, it fits the profile. It doesn't matter where he's from, necessarily. And I think maybe the United, just, you know, this can happen in football. I know managers that have lost their jobs, they've made one bad signing. That's killed them. You could say United have probably made a few bad signings, and you know, they're all over the place the other day. So I guess a lot's got to change, and I imagine it will do, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to turn around, you know. And I think, interestingly, this is the first time Ralph was kind of laying into the players, like there was the divide in the dressing room, that it had gone so far, it had been, you know, pragmatic and diplomatic about how things were, to turning on the players. And as soon as that happened this week, you just knew they were going to get hammered yesterday.
And do you know what, even like it's almost cruel in a way to be compared and say Man United and Liverpool in terms of on the pitch, because like they're not equals. They're equals in terms of stature of a club and the historic rivalry that's there, but in terms of what's happening on the pitch, like, it's almost as if they're playing different sports at the moment. Do you know what I mean? And like, one of the aspects of this can just be summed up by, you look at Ralph Rangnick, who's come in as an interim manager, and like, there was a bit of sense to it in terms of like, after Solskjaer, United were just, again, like, everyone thought that was the nadir. But really, what's happened is there's been an attitude and a mentality allowed to foster under an interim manager who they've known isn't going to be staying on. And players have just been allowed to coast. The players have just been allowed to get through by doing bare minimum. Because there is some talent in there, they've been able to obviously get by. The fact that they're still in with a show of possibly, depending on how results go, being in level on points with the team who are in fourth spot by the end of the weekend, just beggars belief. It's incredible. But where this is coming from, when you look at what's happened at Liverpool, and I mentioned there about some of the policy and the people who are above that and the structure he's working in, and David made the point there about, say, players who will be identified how they work within that structure. Like, Klopp has come from a point at Borussia Dortmund where he came in and was in a position of power early, where the fans, the board and the players, even if they knew they weren't going, knew that this is the man. This is the manager, this is the fellow who is going to be given the chance to drive a club forward. And you have to remember as well, even though Liverpool did come close to winning the league under Brendan Rodgers, like, what had happened just before that in terms of the previous American owners and where the club was at, they were on their knees. They really were. And Jurgen Klopp as a manager has been able to make a connection with a group of fans and a city, essentially, and been able to just totally rejuvenate it. But crucially, and the most important part of all this, regardless of that other connection that he's had, is as a manager, he has complete authority and he has complete control. That's not what Manchester United have. And that's what United need to aim for. Like, I remember when David Moyes was the manager, obviously, when he first replaced Alex Ferguson, and getting absolutely slaughtered by the United fan base when he said that Man City was what we need to aim for in terms of the standard, because that's obviously where City were. But United now need to almost don't look at what Man City are doing, because City, how they're run as a club, is nowhere near how what United can do in terms of the financial backing that they have and the ownership model. Whereas United, even with the owners who have been absolutely central to the decline and the decay of the club, both on and off the pitch, since basically 2005 when they took over, they have to look to Liverpool and see how Liverpool have operated. And that's how it, basically, that's the model. It is, get rid of your players who are out of contract within a year or two, get as much money for them in the market as possible, and if you have those structures in place above with, say, Darren Fletcher, who's the technical director, you've John Worthy, who's basically the head of football operations now, he is the main man on the football side. Like, if anybody is, in a year's time, you're looking at, well, have Man United turned this around or not, he is going to be the mastermind, because he's the one who's being basically entrusted to turn this around. And for so long, United have just rewarded mediocrity. They've been afraid to lose players. They've been afraid to make big decisions with players. They've sacked managers. They've sacked Mourinho. They've sacked Solskjaer. Like, they sacked Louis van Gaal after he won the FA Cup. Louis van Gaal was lifting the FA Cup on the steps of Wembley and getting booed by his own supporters. And within a few hours, it was getting leaked out that Jose Mourinho was getting taken over. Like, what's happened with United hasn't just been over the course of, say, the last number of months or weeks. It's basically been happening for over a decade. And, like, they're just basically being punished. Not punished is the wrong word. They're getting what they deserve, because that's basically how the club is being run.
Absolutely. And, you know, I suppose, David Connolly, just the final question on this before we move on, because there are a host of Premier League fixtures this evening, and I do want to touch on Fulham getting promoted as well. But you mentioned you've been involved in recruitment in the past. I know Ralph Rangnick has mentioned it could take 3 or 4 transfer windows. I mean, yes, there's an asterisk besides this question, because it depended on Glazers, and they're, you know, it seems like it's rotten from the top down as well. You need to invest in a training ground and Old Trafford itself, and they're taking money out of the club and so on and so forth. But in terms of recruitment, this isn't an overnight fix. Like, how worried would you be, given your expertise background in recruitment, with how Manchester United recovers?
Yeah, I would be worried, because, you know, normally you'd have player profiles which would be, you know, historically locked in the recruitment department and positionally. I mean, there was a famous article where they scouted 800 fullbacks before they signed Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But it's one thing to scout the player if he's playing at a particular club. It's another then to handle playing for Man United at Old Trafford, even if maybe they're in a state of decline. And that mentality is so important because, you know, Jadon Sancho, a lot of the players look a shadow of their former selves. And what is that? Is it the weight of the jersey, or are they not as good as maybe they thought they were? Have they overpaid? You know, have the player profiles that they've set out, you know, are they not the right ones? You know, has there been too much emphasis on a particular trait that they missed? Because if you look at Liverpool, when they're upgrading, they upgrade with similar players who are slightly younger. So if you go back to a few years ago, Liverpool players were just sub-prime age. They were sub-prime and they were winning leagues or, you know, doing well on the cusp of greatness, but they were sub-prime. Now they're in their prime and they've supplemented them with the likes of Diaz and Jota who were sub-prime age, you would say. You know, so constantly upgrading with players similar profiles, but then recognising length of contract, you know, that players have got, Mane, Salah, thinking, right, we need backup options just in case. We haven't got a prolific scorer. You know, we need someone else down through the middle. And it's a constant evolution of the profiles that fit how you want to play as a football club. You cannot tell me that, you know, they're playing a high pressing game when Harry Maguire steps out 10 yards and the rest of his defence is 15 yards behind him. You know, they're so disjointed, you couldn't say that they're playing a pressing game or they're playing an absorbing game. I can't see what they were doing at times. You know, so they're not a ball possession team. You know, they're not a counter attacking team. So it's hard. Yeah, so it's tough times ahead.
Yes, certainly is. And even from a neutral perspective, I was watching it nearly with my head in my hands because it was a tough, tough watch. I can only imagine what it was like for Manchester United teams. But one team that does have an identity is Manchester City, of course. They take on Brighton this evening. And we talk about the title race, David Cotton. I'm very formal here by addressing you by your full names when there's two Davids in.
That's
fair.
I'm honoured, yeah.
We're like two
lads in the same class, you know. You have to be... The same name, you know.
I am.
But David Connolly.
I'll look after you, David. If anyone comes near you, don't worry. I'll take care of you.
Manchester City should get the job done against Brighton as this title race rolls on.
Yeah, look, they should do. But, you know, historically, they've had problems with Brighton, right? So, you know, and I know at times Pep says all the right things to butter Graham Pottle up, but then beats him, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, he hasn't had the opportunity to do that because the game's come around so quick. But, you know, Graham is a real tactician, and I know he's had a lot of praise, but people look at the results and think, you know, well, you know, maybe they're not where they should be. But nonetheless, they're going to make it as tough for Man City as it comes. And I think that is a potential banana skin.
Yeah, you know, and if you look at it as well, think about it, like Brighton are coming into that on the back of two massive away wins as well. And I think they've beaten Arsenal and beaten Spurs. And some of the players they have, like, it's a title race, it gets nervy, like, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, it'll be entertaining, if nothing else, to be fair. And listen, we will touch on Chelsea, Arsenal, Everton, Leicester, Newcastle, Palace a little bit later on in the show. But I do want to mention Fulham, because they were promoted last night, so it is newsy. And we talk about players linked with Liverpool as well. One, Fabio Carvalho, who scored last night, as well as Mitrovic notching up 40 goals. David Connolly, if I come back to yourself, myself and David Snaid, David Ella, we're chatting more about Norwich and Fulham being yo-yo clubs and so on and so forth. How impressed have you been with Fulham this year, and will they have enough to stay up? I know there's a transfer window to contend with as well, but will they hopefully go up and stay up?
That's obviously the question, right? Because it's impossible to say. You know, I've got to be honest, I look at the squad and it's kind of similar. Last time they went up, it was a team of loan signings. And at the end of the season, the dressing room, there was probably nobody left. You know, they brought in all sorts of players, Loftus Cheek and Josh Madjo and lads at all over the park that they had loaned. You know, the goalkeeper was on loan, you know, Areola. It was a team of loanees because Scott Parker gave the team that got him up a chance. They didn't take it. He had to get a whole new team in. And it was a season, actually, when you delve a bit deeper, there was something like ninth for chances created, right? But 19th for chances taken. Now, he didn't play Alexander Mitrovic, who's a penalty box player who will take his chances. I think he'll score goals. Ironically, I think it's those players around him that they'll need to improve upon. I think there's question marks at the back. question marks of, over the likes of Tosin. I saw him get destroyed against Coventry. But they got a really good front man, Gyökeres. So, yeah, I mean, look, if they retain Nico Williams, I think he's an outstanding fullback. I think Anthony Robinson's really quick as well. Harry Wilson's got a wand of the left foot. He'll add to the Premier League. But they need more creativity in the middle of the park for me, other than Harrison Reed. And if they lose Carvalho, you know, to Liverpool, they've obviously got that link-up like Harvey Elliott. If they lose Carvalho, they might need a number 10. And obviously, if Mitrovic, you know, they might need a 9. So we'll have to wait and see.
And you mentioned Harry Wilson. Again, just to wrap this up very, very neatly, sold by Liverpool for £12 million. Dominic Solanke, who's second in the goal scoring charts behind Alexander Mitrovic, sold by Liverpool to Bournemouth for £18 million, the price of one Sadio Mane.
Shrewd business. Shrewd just, business.
This is how that is. Works.
Just to wrap up our championship chat, David Connolly, Derby getting relegated as well. It was always going to be a big ask for Wayne Rooney and his Derby players. David Connolly, yeah, that is, I should say.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I mean, look, I think they did all that they can do, but now we talk about recruitment and all this. You know, one, they need to find out who's going to own the club. Two, what players can they sign? They're not going to be the biggest team in League One. You know, yeah, have you seen the size of the clubs in League One? I mean, yeah. You know, Sheffield Wednesday will out-sing them. You know, Sunderland, unless they go up. You know, the list is endless. You've got your Charltons of this world who get 25,000 every week and people think it's a small club. Ipswich, you know, where do you end? So Dolby added to that, you know, I think it's going to be a difficult season for them in League One. So they need to start planning, get the right team in place. Ipswich made something like 17 signings in the summer, you know, and they're not going to make the playoffs. So it's a really difficult league.
Indeed it is, yes, very much so. David Connolly, has been a pleasure chatting as always. Great to have your company. I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon. And yet, I mean, there's so much to get through on that as well. But listen, we will be continuing our football chat with David Snaid a little bit later on. But in a few moments' time, we're going to turn our attention to swimming as John Kenny will have an update from day 2 at the Irish Open Swimming Championships. Do stay with us.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I am delighted to say John Kenny joins us live from the National Aquatic Centre as day 2 of the Irish Open Championships draws to a close. John, we saw a double for Paddy Johnson yesterday among some really entertaining races. Have we just had as much excitement on day 2?
Began with an Irish junior record. Sunday Weld, Liam Custer here at the NAC, took gold in 4 minutes, 24.50 seconds. The 18-year-old controlling the race, he held off Caden McCarthy of Limerick to the national title. Indeed, Custer's time, respectable one, just 1.28 seconds off the Irish senior record held by Castlebar's Killian Melly. A 23-year-old dolphin swimmer, Max McCusker, the fastest qualifier for the morning heats, won the men's blue ribbon. That's the 100 freestyle. Respectable time, sub-50, 49.67 seconds, holding off Callum Bain and the Irish relay Olympian Jordan Sloan. McCusker is also the fastest qualifier into the men's 50 metres butterfly final. That'll wrap up proceedings this evening. The Tokyo Olympian, Daniel Hill, won the 200 backstroke in 2 minutes 14.38, beating Limerick-based Maria Godden, who's the fastest qualifier. That's Hill's second title of the week, having won the women's 50 freestyle on day 1. And Dublin's Niamh Coyne won a silver medal at the 2018 Buenos Aires Youth Olympic Games in the 100 breaststroke. Well, she won the national title here in 1 minute 7.83 seconds. And in the waters, the penultimate race of the day, well, the penultimate senior race of the day, Grace Hodgins is leading in the women's 1500 metres freestyle. She won the 400 yesterday, so I say she'll be after Johnson, who you mentioned there, had become the, along with Daniel Hill, another double gold medalist here at this meet.
Brilliant stuff. As I say, it does go on all week. It's a 5-day event. What should we be looking forward to tomorrow, John?
Well, today we saw Ava Jones, just 14 years of age, win the junior final in the 100 metres breaststroke. Very respectable time, 1.13.34 seconds. I'm looking forward to her competing in the 200, just to see how she goes. As I say, she's only 14 years of age. We did mention yesterday that this meet is kind of shorn of many of its top stars, because the likes of Mona McSharry and Ellen Walsh have stayed in Tennessee. Shane Ryan is coming off shoulder surgery, and Brendan Hyland's gone to Australia. So it's a chance for the lesser lights to come through. So Jones tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow anyway, in the 200. Interesting to see how the 14-year-old goes from Port Marnock.
Great stuff. So I suppose, yes, we did mention there's some big names missing, but you've been impressed overall with the standard you've seen.
Yeah, it's, as I said, the with the top names missing, they've got a chance to qualify for junior Europeans and indeed for senior Europeans, but most of those senior swimmers we mentioned have already pre-qualified for the bigger events later this year. Indeed, Ellen Keane warmed up for the summer's World Paralympic Swimming Championships in Madeira in Portugal in the 100 metres breaststroke. That was the event which the 27-year-old won gold at the Games in Tokyo last year. So outside of those big-name swimmers, we do have quite a few Paralympic swimmers taking part in this particular meet as well. And Walsh's time, Walsh is about 5 seconds off her gold medal in Tokyo last year, so she won't be overly impressed by the time, but she's just swimming through at this stage, so all eyes from her will be in Madeira in Portugal later on this year.
Brilliant stuff. John Kenny, thank you very much. A informative update from the National Aquatic Centre. John Kenny will be joining Marie Crow for an update on day 3 of the Irish Open Swimming Championship. So from swimming to soccer, stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM. With Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On, the final part of Game On this Wednesday evening. I'm Shane Dawson. David Snaid is still live with me as we turn our attention back to football. And I'm delighted to say our reporter Peter Smith is at the Etihad Stadium, and who can set the scene for us ahead of Manchester City versus Brighton. Peter.
Well, City now have 90 minutes to respond and a platform, as Liverpool have taken centre stage, twice coming from behind to glean a point here in their previous Premier League match. And before that, well, there was that FA Cup semi-final, and now City being dislodged from pole position in the Premier League. And City up against the Brighton side, who've won back-to-back away games at Arsenal and Tottenham, and who are just 2 points short of their best ever Premier League points tally. A City win would see them move a point clear once more. If they can get that win against Brighton, they've got a good record in recent times, though, having won 8 of the last 9 meetings. As regards selections, I think we're expecting to see Kevin De Bruyne back for a recall as he vows for a third consecutive Premier League goal. Ilkay Gundogan is another likely starter. Ruben Dias is back in contention as well after injury. For Brighton, Yves Bissouma is the only absentee as he commences a one-match suspension.
Excellent stuff, Peter Smith. Thank you very much. We'll be interested to see, can Manchester City keep that title race going? But David Snaid, there are, of course, other fixtures in tonight's Premier League. Chelsea, Arsenal, Everton, Leicester, Newcastle, Palace. Where would you like to start? Chelsea, Arsenal?
Yeah, nice old London derby. Romelu Lukaku, looking there, seems to actually be starting for Chelsea. Looking through the team news that's just come out there, him and Werner are starting up front. Mason Mount just in behind. Like, this is a huge game for Arsenal. Like, they've stuttered in the last few weeks. It's one of those kind of, what's that famous thing about Arsenal? Like, same old Arsenal, always cheating. But this seems to be the same old Arsenal, almost bottling it, because yeah, like, they got into such a good position, really good position, and then just have fallen away a little bit. And those same little, the soft underbelly, one of those questions that was always asked in the later years of under Arsene Wenger about, they were nice and they were kind of like very good on the eye, but when it was poured up to them, they kind of stuttered. And like, Mikel Arteta has tried to get rid of that a little bit, so I think this is a big one for them, especially when you see maybe even Spurs stuttering a little bit. United being Manchester United, you can't expect them to be able to put a run together. So if Arsenal can go there and get a win or put in a performance to kind of even get a point, because of even a point at Stamford Bridge would be sensational for them there this evening, you know.
Absolutely. Romelu Lukaku still plays for Chelsea. Who knew?
The season, it's crazy what's happening with him this year.
One team that can't afford many more slip-ups is Everton. They're at home to Leicester City. Another tough one for Everton, I suppose. I could preface every match that Everton play with another tough one for Everton.
I thought it was one of the best things that's probably happened to Everton in the last week has been what's happened at Burnley, when they've just decided to sack their manager. And Sean Dyche, who, like they were in, like the two of them were in obviously that relegation battle. Like Everton, like you mentioned earlier about the kind of how Manchester United have been run and some of the toxicity that's around the place there. Like what's happened at Everton over the last number of years and the money that they have wasted.
Scandalous.
Oh, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So like Frank Lampard kind of took that job, probably I'd say his ego kind of maybe got the better of him a little bit, not maybe realising just, he kind of, I'd say within about a week of working with that group of players and some of the issues that are going on behind the scenes there, I'd say he realised, oh, this is in trouble and the chicken, it's coming home to roost a little bit. But I would say, similar to how we mentioned earlier about United having that individual quality, like you would think that there should be a little bit too much quality in certain games for Everton to be able to just pick up the points that we needed to get them away. And Leicester probably looking more so now in Europe in terms of the being in the semi-final, isn't it, in the Conference yeah. League. So like they're probably kind of switched off now a little bit in the league, I'd say.
Absolutely, playing my adopted Italian team Roma, so hopefully Roma gets the job done.
Jose's boys
indeed. And finally, you mentioned, I suppose, financial mismanagement in Everton. One club not short a few quid, Newcastle. They're at home to Crystal Palace. It is 13th versus 14th, or should I say 14th versus 13th if I'm going to give Newcastle as the home team. Eddie Howe's done an alright job, they're staying up anyway.
Yeah, no, he's gone in, he's been able to revitalise the club again, just being able to sign some quality players. You see Bruno Guimaraes as well, and the impact he's had has been really impressive. But he's also gotten a bit more of a tune out of other players who were there, like Joe Linton, just revitalise him. It's like what all top coaches and managers be able to do is be able to actually work with a bit more to some of your parts, and that's what he's been able to do. Like we mentioned earlier about Derby County getting relegated, like it wasn't so long ago before the Saudi takeover at Newcastle that Jason Knight was linked with a move there. Obviously Jeff Hendrick had been there, he's now gone along to QPR. But Newcastle now are at a level, you see John Joe Shelby talking during the week about it won't be long before they're like Man City or PSG, and it was basically imperative that Eddie Howe kept them up. Whether he's the man to take them to that next level remains to be seen. But I would say this season, in a few years' time, when the story of what's happened at Newcastle has been written, him keeping them up this year will be absolutely vital.
I want to finish on an Irish note. You mentioned Jason Knight there, and we'll be very interested to see where Jason Knight's future lies now that Derby go down, but also Gavin Bazunu. And I know I gave you a bit of a slag in there in my intro comparing you with former international David Connolly, but jokes aside, you had a really good article in the 42 about Gavin Bazunu's future, and just very briefly, David, it's up in the air, I suppose, somewhat.
Yeah, look, he's 2 years left on his contract. You speak to people around the place about it, and just the nature of his performances in League One with Portsmouth, but also with Ireland, and he's really caught the eye of clubs throughout Europe, not just in England, like even there's Premier League clubs, and it seemed to kind of, you would have looked at it from the outside, oh well, we'll go back to City and then go back out on a loan, but there's a real possibility that he could be leaving City permanently this year, and it would not be a surprise if he is at a Premier League club playing regularly football in the next short time.
Okay, well, watch this space. David Snaid, thank you very much for your company.